Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time to take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Bill Stork back with us on the show today. He's the owner of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. We'll talk about pets with fireworks anxiety and thunderstorm anxiety, and we'll take your other pet care questions as well. So does your pet have a problem with loud noises? Love to have you part of the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Bill Stork, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Larry. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
You know, I'm dog sitting this week with a Staffordshire, just a wonderful older dog who is not bothered by the loud noises of fireworks and so forth. But there are many dogs that are. Why are some so much more afraid of loud noises than others?
Well, we suspect that somewhere along the line, there may have been an association with loud noises and something bad happening. And it's not in the least bit unusual for dogs that are afraid of fireworks to be fine with thunderstorms, and dogs that are afraid of thunderstorms to be fine with hammer drills and gunshots and things like that. But the suggestions that I'm going to make are pretty much universal for dogs that have loud noise phobias. And we approach it from kind of a multimodal, all-encompassing approach. And can you give him something just to take the edge off of it? It's probably one of the most requested phrases we'll hear as veterinarians, and whether it be for nail trims or because they're afraid of thunderstorms and fireworks. And just taking the edge off of them is not as easy as it looks on TV, because we can make them a little sedate, we can make them a little bit mellow, but as soon as the stimulus arrives, as soon as the first clap of thunderbolt of lightning or fireworks, then they have a tendency to override. So with these situations, we back up several steps and take what I call the blimp view. And what it's all about is first trying to siphon all the physical and mental energy that you can. And that involves, you know, if the 4th of July is a week away or a week and a half away, if you're not already, things like physical activity can be highly beneficial, as is mental activity. And this is a mistake I made once upon a time. I would come home from work and throw frisbees for my dogs until they couldn't walk. Well, I created these Olympic athletes, but they were still apprehensive when loud noises come along. Things that can be really beneficial, and for those who are not hip to this, it can sound a little hocus pocus, but a long sniffing walk. I mean, literally dog on a leash, walking around the neighborhood where there's all kinds of interesting smells. It's like giving a kid a book and wearing out their mind, because dogs and cats have senses of smells that are hundreds of times more sensitive than ours. And all of the details that they're calculating as they walk around with their nose on the ground or their nose in the air engages their mind very nicely, to the extent that we've made this recommendation to clients, and a week later we do a follow-up telephone call and they say, man, you guys are brilliant. This is working fantastic. 10 days later, they call us up and tell us that we're fools. We need to come up with another idea. And further investigation reveals that they're going on the same walk in the same neighborhood, on the same side of the street, in the same direction at the same time of day. And it would be like getting a Wisconsin State Journal on Sunday and reading that same paper for a month. You're going to run out of information pretty quickly. So, you know, engaging the dog, long sniffing walks can make a big deal. If you have a dog that eats really rapidly, food dispensing and devices like slow bowls can be very beneficial. And when I started in practice 29 years ago, I never thought I'd hear myself say the word licky mat, or snuffle mats. But believe it or not, there are devices for dogs that eat very ravenously where you can take their food and place it in essentially AstroTurf or your backyard for that matter. Anything that makes them work harder and think harder. Kong toys that you can stuff with kibble and peanut butter and freeze them to make it take a little bit longer. Once again, we're engaging their mind and engaging them physically in advance of the loud noise event. And then when the loud noise event comes along, and this may evolve into one of the longest winded answers that I've ever given on your program, Larry, but once the loud noise event comes along, then some things to take into consideration is, one, your reaction is going to be their reaction. And stress and anxiety have a tendency to be contagious. I get that. It's understandable. When the dog starts pacing and panting, our natural response is to try and appease them, when our natural response needs to attempt to be as low key as we possibly can. And if there is an area of the house, for one client that was on his couch in his man cave, if he laid on the couch, the dog would lay on top of him, and they'd both fall asleep, and they could care less what was happening outside. If it involves hiding behind the toilet, if when they get to that spot, whether it be the couch downstairs behind the toilet, the bathtub, if they're not pacing, if they're not panting, if they're not frantic, if they're not trembling, that's just fine. I mean, that means that's their way of appeasing the situation. And finally, here's the part that I think a lot of people are looking for, you know, is there just a pill that we can give them to quote unquote take the edge off of them? And you know, when you call your veterinarian and say the 4th of July is coming up, my dog is scared to death, they're going to ask you some details about what they do and how scared are they, because there's just a few situational anti-anxiety products that we can use near the event. And sedation is always very tempting. That's a pretty sexy attempt, but there again, it's hard to just take the edge off of them and render them calm, cool, quiet, and collected in the face of all these loud noises that have a tendency to make them nervous.
Yeah. And, you know, Marty in the Minneapolis area has a question or comment that relates directly to what we're talking about, I think. Marty, what's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a senior dog that is about 13. She's a Yorkie Shih Tzu, and she was a rescue to me at 1 year old, now 13. And she has this pattern of getting anxious when anyone comes over, anyone, and she will shake and get upset, and doesn't matter the time of day, and goes back into the laundry room and begins to, I'll call it dig, but it's just paw the pipes or even the washer dryer, and it makes a lot of noise. I probably wouldn't care, except it makes quite a bit of noise. And the only thing that seems to work for her is to let her go into the garage with the door shut and just lay in there. And that seems to make her happy. She doesn't want, she's really geared on me. She's really my dog. And, you know, the big event in the last year is that my wife divorced me after 24 years and left the home. And our son is back and forth between the two homes. He's almost 21. So that has created, from my perspective, a sense that her den has moved away. And she is reactive, I think, to that. We never really had people to the house much at all in the past. So now it's just me, and she is very loyal to me. I take her on walks. I was really enjoying what your last comment was about keeping dogs' minds busy. That was informative to me because I've taken her on longer walks to kind of wear her out physically, but that doesn't seem to make any difference at all. And the dog has several physical issues, lots of arthritis. So she's on Medicam for that, and she's on, which seems to really help her, and she's got gabapentin, and she even has some tramadol, which I don't think really helps her calm down. But that's kind of a synopsis of her life, and she loves to, right now she's laying out in the sun and just likes to, on a leash, you know, but definitely has the terrier side that if someone, another dog or a car or something goes by, she's all about wanting to go kill that person or that dog. She's very friendly to kids and to people, and she will kind of charge an adult if they're carrying something, but then she'll back off from that. And if they come close to her, she just kind of withers away and doesn't really, she's never bitten anyone. And she will let me pick her up and hold her. But you know, when she's in this anxious state of very shaky, if I pick her up and hold her, she doesn't seem to really be calmed much by that. She doesn't try to get away necessarily, but she won't stay. She's not really a lap dog. The Shih Tzu part is usually the lap dog, and she'll come and do her rounds every hour.
Yeah. Well, let's let Dr. Bill get in here with a comment, Marty.
Well, I'll tell you. At a behavioral conference worth of points there. And I'm going to try and say some things that are across the top true. And the first of all, I love the fact that you got a 13-year-old dog that you're still taking on walks. Doing that well at 13 years of age. Another thing that I've learned, and I've learned this with my own dog, and that is that anxieties increase with age. You can find it if you go visit your dad at the nursing home. You can find it if you have a 13-year-old dog. My dog is 12 years old. We're very fortunate. We live out in the country. Our driveway is 750 feet long. And one of the things that I've found out that is that we work really hard when dogs are young to socialize them, to get them used to people, to get them used to cars and trucks and sounds and old people and young people and fast people and slow people. But then when they get old, we forget to keep doing that. And dogs can become unsocialized as they age very handily. And I've seen that. I've made that mistake myself to the extent that my wife and I have talked about the value of putting our dog in the truck, driving to town, and going for a walk in town to change things up. One of the other pieces that you mentioned in there was that if she goes to the garage, you know, she views that as safe and she settles down, in which case that's an awesome option. If there is a place that she can go that she settles down, then all the better. And that's a piece of a good solution. It doesn't surprise me that she's not calmed when you pick her up because, you know, once she's into that mode, once she's trembling and shaking and baking, then you're not likely to be able to break that. And the only other potential option, aside from all of the things I talked about on the top end with regard to wearing out her mind, the only other thing that could potentially be beneficial is to try and counter-condition her, in which case you coordinate with the person who's coming to visit you and you initiate something that's intensely positive, whether her favorite toy, something to eat, something for her to chew on. 13-year-old small dogs aren't known for chewing on things, but you try and make a positive association for what's about to happen. Because I also sense that once they're there, there's no number of hot dogs and cheese and things like that that are going to prevent her from ramping up. So, yeah, sorry to hear about your life change. It's a tough one.
Thank you very much, Marty, for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at your pet's health, we focused a bit on sound, fireworks, and loud noises, but we can take other pet questions as well. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your pet's health today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Before we get back to that, I just want to mention we've got a new blog up, and it involves pedaling and paddling. You can combine them. Timothy Bowers, self-confessed kayak junkie, who talks us through some of his favorite kayak hiking combination trails that are located in the Driftless area. So maybe you can take your pet on one of those. Anyway, the blog's up. Go to WPR.org/Larry today's date. You can look over on the right side and you'll see the blog there at Pedaling and Paddling. Right now we're talking about pedaling and paddling your dog and other pets through their lives, some of it relating to problems with loud noises, but other questions as well. And again, join in 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Nancy in Wausau, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you very much. We adopted about 4 months ago a 3 to 4 year old German Shepherd terrier mix who is a female, and she has become obsessed with me. I am her primary caregiver. However, it's my husband and my two daughters in the house, and we all are actively engaged with her, but she follows me. I work from home. She's at my feet all day long. She looks at me while we're sitting at the table. She'll just have her gaze fixed on me. She likes to fetch, and we all like to play with her, but when other people throw the ball, she'll get the ball and sit down, but when I throw the ball, she'll back and forth for dozens of tosses. When someone else throw the ball, I'm inside. She'll come up and sit by the door waiting for me to come out. It's problematic because I want the whole family to be, be able to enjoy her as much as I do. And oftentimes if she's sitting by me, she'll growl if someone comes near me. So that's my situation.
Hmm. There's a lot to this question as well. And to some extent, you told us a lot right out of the gate when you said that you adopted an adult dog. And then when you adopted a German Shepherd Terrier cross, I'm trying to imagine this purpose-driven, highly intelligent machine that you have brought home. And to an extent, she's doing just exactly what she was trained and bred to do, which it's not unusual for them to be bonded specifically to one person. And you said something in there towards the end about she growls at other people when they come around. Well, she's resource guarding you, and that's a real deal. And you said she's been with you for about 3 or 4 months.
Well, yeah, since February.
Okay, since February. So I love the fact that you're cognizant of these things, and I'm going to encourage you to take them very seriously, and I'm going to encourage you to seek some expertise well beyond this conversation. So I'm just going to kind of hit some highlights in this situation. First of all, she's resource guarding you. That's a big deal. That's going to get worse. It stands to get worse. And there are some very specific things that you and the rest of your family will need to do. If she's resource guarding you, you have to leave. Just as if a dog resource guards their food or a toy, then that toy gets taken away. And because resource guarding is kind of a gateway behavior to things that could follow. And she's been, you're just now getting past the honeymoon with this dog. And she's just in the process of becoming the dog that she's going to be later on in life. And I also get the impression that you don't leave her a great deal.
Well, no. I mean, I do work from home, so I'm home a good part of the day. However, yeah. I do leave, of course, to go do things and go to the grocery store and things like that. And yeah, she's home either alone or with others.
Good. Being home alone is really valuable. And being home with others is really valuable. And having them engage in very specific activities so that, you know, they take her for a walk, they play fetch. And when that's taking place, you're gone and you're not there. If you have a qualified behaviorist in the area, I would recommend having some at-home visits with a qualified behaviorist. And one of the things to look for is if you have somebody who is certified, that's going to be very certified knowledge assessed is going to be very valuable. I've heard stories of a few so-called a few trainers who have showed up with shock collars and pinch collars. We want none of that, and I'm sure that you realize that very well, but this is not to be trifled with.
Yeah. Good luck, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling. Dale in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Dale.
Good morning to you guys.
Good morning.
Hey, we have been lifelong German Shepherd owners, and they're amazing dogs, wonderful dogs, not always as vicious as some people make them out to be, but starting about three shepherds back, we began having a situation where they became very itchy. We've had basically one at a time. We live in a country, and it's very much of pollen. And to the point where the dog had removed some hair and actually gotten a secondary skin infection. So the veterinarian we've gone to says, well, it is itching. It is an infection, so let's get rid of the infection with some topical and oral medicine, which helped right away. But he prescribed a new medication called, for us at least, was called Apoquel. It seems to be an immune system modulator. And after several days, it did decrease the itching quite a bit. But rather than being able to treat it and then gently remove it, it always seemed itching came back with a vengeance. And just out of not wanting our animals to suffer, we would resume it. Well, it's now $3 a pill, sometimes two pills a day. And the veterinarian doesn't seem to have much to offer as far as a cheaper alternative or getting to the basis of it. And I know that we've had friends who had other dogs who, when they went into an allergy season, would unfortunately in some ways get a shot of long-lasting steroid, which helped with the itching and seemed to give relief, but of course all of the problems associated with it. But have you an opinion? You know, Apoquel seems to work. If it wasn't more medicine money than what we spend on ourselves. And I can't see our dogs suffering, but I also wonder if there are alternatives. And have you heard of any situations where Apoquel, while not necessarily being addictive, the rebound from removal from the medication seems to be as worse as the itch itself?
Okay. Thanks, Dale. What do you think, Dr. Bell?
Well, Dale, I've often said that if it weren't itchy dogs, I would have to take up golf because I'd have a lot of extra time on my hands. And the options, and this is a very big discussion. I'll probably have this exact same discussion this afternoon. And you, like almost every client who has a dog that suffers from allergies, are always looking to get to the bottom of the problem and the source of the problem and figure out exactly what's going on. So here are our options. One is Apoquel to effect. And for some dogs, it's very seasonal. For some dogs, that season is very prolonged. For some dogs, there are times of the year when we have to have them on a higher dose and others when they get by on a lower dose. Apoquel has a cousin that's an injectable called Cytopoint that is very similarly priced as Apoquel. And by the way, I am with you when it comes to the expense of Apoquel because, you know, to the right of me at my desk, I have an invoice to pay for the mother load of Apoquel. So trust me when I tell you, your veterinarian is not paying for his new Mercedes based on the money he makes from Apoquel. Then that gets us back to old school, because Larry can see me in the camera. I am as old as I look and sound. Before Apoquel, and Apoquel's only been around for about the last 7 years, our options were steroids. Well, steroids are less expensive, to be certain. They will make your dog not itch, absolutely. But the side effects of steroids are potentially more devastating than the side effects of the Apoquel. And so finally, I'm going to get around to the part when people say, man, I really want to know what the problem is. Well, in order to answer that question involves allergy testing. And it, in the old days, it was done by injecting allergens on the dog's skin. In the new days, it's done with a test called a RAST test. We draw about a half a gallon of blood from your dog, send it to the lab. We give them a big, long history, tell them where we live, what we do, where what we eat, and what the dog eats. And then they expose the serum to all these allergens, and you get a report back. They test for somewhere around 180 different allergens. Well, in a perfect world, we would find out that they were allergic to three things that we could remove from their environment. Very seldom happens. In the real world, we hope for them to be really, really allergic to somewhere around 5 to 7 things, in which case then we formulate immunotherapy. We give them allergy shots. Oftentimes it works. Oftentimes it helps significantly in 2021. In 2022, the environment changes, the things that are airborne bloom, pollinate at different times of the year, and they don't work quite as well as they did the previous year, and so on. So under the best of circumstances, immunotherapy, which is treating the source, will oftentimes result in us using less Apoquel, less Cytopoint, fewer steroids. But it's I always prepare people for the fact that it's not likely to make it stone cold go away. And the other option along the lines of getting to the root cause, lots of people love to change their dog's food with the best of intentions, hoping that they're going to be able to quiet things down. Most dog allergies, atopic situations, aren't necessarily associated with food. And when we do that, we have to be really surgical about the things that we remove from their diet. So, big issue. I'm with you, man. And I love the fact that you're sensitive to your dog's comfort in the situations. And the sooner you get at it, we love to be able to prevent all those infections and hotspots.
Good luck. Thank you so much, Dale, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's take a call from Christy in Wilton. Hi, Christy. Christy, are you there? Maybe we lost Christy.
Hi, Larry. Here I am.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm real excited. We have a pup again. It's a field bred Springer Spaniel, and I know it's a hyper dog. We've had them before. She's her name's Katie. She's 4.5 months old. I've had her to basic obedience class, and she graduated last week. But she has a major, I know they love water, but she has a major infatuation with water. She, you know, the water bowl, she steps in it, she stands in it, she tips it over, barks at it. We have a huge pond in our property. We live in the country. I cannot get her out of the pond. She's just in there, just barking. And the hose, when I take the hose out, she bites at it and runs with it, takes the water buckets, and makes it quite interesting to try to get things done around the house. So I do have, you know, she knows the cues of leave it and no, but when it comes to the water, she's just totally ignoring me. So I don't know if you have any tips on that.
Oh, man. Well, what you've got is a binge drinker. And we see those dogs every now and then. And there are these dogs that we've gone so far to work them up for medical underpinnings for the symptoms that you just described. Like, can she make it through the night without having to go outside and go to the bathroom? Does it seem absurd the amount of urine that she produces?
She stays in her crate and she's, you know, goes right in and sleeps all night.
Okay, nicely done. In which case, I seriously doubt that we're dealing with something like diabetes insipidus or a medical underpinning for this situation. And I'm going to have to back out and just kind of make a broad sweeping recommendation for this condition, in which case you have to limit her intake. And you said you have a pond on your property. It's going to kind of be difficult to limit her access to the pond, but you also say you're using a crate for her, in which case, you know, when you're watering your garden or your flowers or you have the sprinkler running or something like that, you may have to resort to using the crate. When it comes time for her to drink, you may have to limit how much water she has access to and then pick it up and not allow her to have access to it. You know, as far as the pond, it's a while before that's going to be freezing over. So, you know, whether you limit her access to that, man, I'm not sure. But we've seen dogs that are, well, and the other thing, and it sounds as if you're doing a lot of really awesome things with regard to the obedience and things like that. You know, next up will be Beyond Basics and Rally and all of the other things that you're going to be doing with her. But, and it also sounds as if you're very familiar with a field bred spaniel. So you've got an energetic, intelligent dog on your hands. So it's going to take a big approach to this.
And Christy, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Catherine emailed to ask if CBD oil will help her dog's anxiety when riding in a car and from thunderstorms.
CBD. Boy, there is a big, broad category, and it's going to require me to try and pronounce a word that I'm not comfortable pronouncing, which is cannabidiols. There's lots of them in every preparation. So they're not all created equally. And each of those substances, some of them have anti-anxiety properties, some of them have anti-inflammatory properties. And one of the reasons why the FDA has yet to approve it is it's really hard for us to get a handle on everything that is in those products. So they're a little bit of a wild card. We don't know exactly what's going to be in there. And even if we did, I don't think CBD would be the best approach for dogs that have travel anxieties. Two different ways dogs can be anxious about travel. One, the owner can be a wild stinking driver and it's dangerous to ride with them. Two, they can be anxious because they get nauseous. And if they are anxious as a result of nausea, some of the things that can be beneficial is to have them travel in a crate and have the crate covered up. Also, over-the-counter options like Dramamine and Meclizine can be beneficial. Also, if they're anxious as a result of nausea, your veterinarian has a product called Serenia that can be very valuable in settling nausea when they travel. Or they can be anxious because they're anxious when they travel, and that becomes a counter conditioning thing whereby we approach the car, positively reinforce them, don't even leave the driveway, approach the car, go to the end of the driveway, come back, positively reinforce them, and so on. So travel anxiety is a thing, and that's some of the ways that we will approach it.
Michelle emailed that she has a three-month-old puppy and her city's fireworks are set off across the street from her house. And she's wondering about protecting her ears and getting the dog's ears and getting her used to the loud noises.
Well, as far as protecting her ears, if you have a dog that will stand to wear shooter's earmuffs or earplugs, then it might be one of the first that I've known. You know, the basement as far away from, in the room most removed from the loud noises and the flashing of the lights are going to help. Otherwise, as far as getting them accustomed to loud noises, we get back to that conditioning situation. You know, for example, people who hunt with animals, hunt with their dogs, and they start with a pellet gun, and they move up to a 22, and they move up to a 38, and they keep progressing to from far away, not so loud, abrupt noises to closer, louder, abrupt noises in an attempt to condition them to those noises. And once again, a couple of questions ago, we alluded to how our reaction is their reaction. And it really goes a long way if the dog is ramping up for you to attempt as best you can to stay calm yourself.
Good points. Dr. Bill Stork, our guest today, he owns Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic and author of 3 books. Great to have him with us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Bill Stork. Dr. Bill owns Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, and he's authored 3 books. He does an awful lot, writes some newspaper columns as well. It's great to have him back, and great to have you listening in. Our lines are all filled, so I think we'll just go right to the phones. And Lucas and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Lucas. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and Dr. Bill. Big fan of the show. I love listening every morning. I just had a question. So I have a long-term relationship with my girlfriend, and I only see her one day a week. And she has a pit bull dachshund mix, and she's about 43 pounds. Anytime I come over, it seems like she's just always trying to dominate me, especially when I'm, you know, around my girlfriend, whenever I'm, you know, anytime I try to kiss her or anything like that. And I'm just at a loss. I'm not a dog behavioralist, and I would rather get some advice from someone who knows a little bit more than me.
And by dominate, what does the dog do?
So she'll try to jump up on me whenever I sit down. She'll just try to literally get up as far onto me as she can. You know, she'll try biting at my ears, which is playful, but just anytime, she always just is right there anytime that I'm near my girlfriend.
Okay. Bill, what do you think, Dr. Bill?
Well, first of all, I think that that's going to be a serious impediment in a once-a-week relationship, and we've got to figure this thing out with all the urgency. And also, you can feel the stress in Lucas's voice over the radio. And my recommendations, I realize, are going to be a little bit challenging when you only get to see your girlfriend once a week. And, you know, what do you do with kids if you feel as if they're about to behave in a fashion that you don't wish? That is, you ask them to do what you want them to do right before they're about to do what you want them not to do. And some of the things that can be beneficial is that you establish some expectations with the dog. For example, if the dog will go for leash walks, and it seems as if we've dedicated this whole hour to talking about taking a dog for a leash walk, but it's really, really valuable. Your girlfriend, when she's going to know when you're coming over, in all likelihood, if she can have the dog on a leash when you're about to come over, and she can get the dog to sit, and she can get the dog to obey a couple of basic commands. And if the dog, for example, is treat responsive, and Lucas shows up not only with a dozen roses in one hand, but a handful of treats for the dog in the other hand, and positively reward the dog when you show up, and then do very specific things. I mean, if the dog don't sit, stay down, take a walk around the block, great way to get reintroduced to the girlfriend anyway. Those things can be very beneficial. Other things that she can do is if the dog engages on bones, on chew toys, on frozen Kongs, things like that, one of the things that she can do is rewind to back to the days when the dog was in the crate. And when you arrive, the dog is in the crate, so that you're not being introduced to the dog as soon as you walk through the door, allowing the dog to diffuse and then making the introduction after that. This is a challenging one. And you also describe, once again, a very energetic and spirited dog. We've heard from the owners of some really interesting crossbreed dogs.
Thanks. And would you have Lucas walk the dog himself or with the girlfriend?
Yeah, no, that'd be incredibly beneficial.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Lucas. Thank you. Jerry in Franklin, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Yes. We have a 3-year-old golden doodle, and he's gotten into the habit of eating grass constantly, which causes him to vomit. And then he doesn't want to eat his breakfast because his stomach is upset. And I can hear his stomach is just rumbling, and he's passing gas. It's just a terrible... he's just very uncomfortable. Is there any way we could stop him from doing that? Or I just don't know why they do that.
And a lot of dogs do that, Dr. Bill.
It's a pretty darn common telephone call. My dog loves to eat grass. And you didn't mention that he will go so far as to gobble the grass and the dirt that is that the grass is growing in, because that's kind of a problem of an entirely different magnitude. And at the risk of sounding obvious, a way to approach this situation is, you know, most of us love to just open the door, let our dogs go out, do their business. When they're done, we bring them back in. In a situation like this, we may have to get a little bit proactive and hook the dog up to a leash, take it for a walk, and have it do its business while we're walking, in which case we can give it a command like one of the previous callers alluded to, the fact that she was teaching her young dog, leave it and drop it and things like that. And there are a couple of commands that you can teach them that you can teach them and condition them to drop things, leave things, and what that's all about. And I won't attempt to walk you through the instructions for that, but essentially you're making a trade. You know, if the dog has something that it wants really, really badly, you give it a command and then you give it something of an even higher value. So, you know, maybe hot dogs have a higher value than grass. And you can train them to leave it or drop it in that fashion, or you become proactive. And in order to break this cycle, you go for a leash walk.
Yeah, makes sense. Jerry, good luck. Thank you. Tyron in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, thank you.
Yeah, good morning. Calling. Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Jill. Good morning, Milwaukee. Yeah, Tyrone W. speaking, northwest side of Milwaukee. Well, I tell you, I'm excited. Both my knuckleheads have passed. They were brothers. My nephew, Davon, and his girlfriend, Brittany, had brought them home one night. I guess they followed them home. I'm like, what is this? So I raised them. You know, for as long as I had them there, you speak about the eating of the grass and all there. Well, you know, I had the Roundup, and I know that, you know, with different things in the yard going on, and then the bees and all, with the Roundup spray and then the spraying for the bees and all, Tango, because we named them Tango and Cass, you know.
We seem to have lost Tyler W.
Yeah, he was talking. I know he was talking about his dog's different reactions to loud noises.
Well, he was talking about eating grass and possibly killing the grass with Roundup. That seems a little extreme. There are a number of things I'd tried before I would try and kill the grass.
Yeah, I'm sorry we lost you there, Tyron. But thank you for. Calling, appreciate your call. Let's go to Jerry. I'm sorry, let's go to Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have a almost four-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback, and she's highly energetic, of course, loves to run a lot, and she's had a few trips to the ER, gashing her shoulder, and the last one was in January. Apparently, she got a hold of some marijuana and developed marijuana toxicity. So they gave her a blood test to rule out other things, and they put an IV in her because she was dehydrated. Since then, Evie will not let the vet come near her with a shot. So we haven't been able to do her heartworm test. And I've tried four times at the vet. We put her on trazodone, and then the next time gabapentin with the trazodone. And Evie just knows when that vet is coming at her with a shot, she's real strong and can move real quick and just won't let it happen. So I brought a vet to the house just for the first time and without the meds. And Evie liked her a lot, and we were able to give her one vaccine. But after that, Evie would not let the vet touch her with even the stethoscope.
Wow, what do we do in that kind of situation, Bill?
Well, you've got a whole big bunch of dog there for certain, and you've got a dog that has developed an association with being touched in that fashion. So some of the things that are on the list of options is we could always train you up on how to draw blood from your dog yourself. Maybe she would let that happen, but not everybody is up for that. One of the options that requires a great deal of patience and a great deal of time and a great deal of timing is a practice called touch training. And there are videos out there on the internet. If you can't find touch training videos on YouTube and things like that, the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic website, under the behavioral tab, way down at the bottom, there's a video on touch training. We use it most commonly for procedures like nail trimming. But essentially what it involves is you're imitating the motion at home and you're taking it as far as the dog will let you before they bail out. So for example, if it involves a syringe and needle, then you approach the dog with the syringe and needle. If they run away, they get to run away. But if they stay and allow you to touch them with one hand while you have a syringe and needle in the other hand, then they get a reward. And you repeat that until the dog actually offers up a paw while you have a syringe and needle in your hand. Then you switch that syringe and needle to the hand that's nearest the dog. And when they allow that, when they allow you to touch them, then you reward them. And you get the idea. We get closer and closer to the actual act of drawing blood and rewarding them all the time. As I say, that takes a lot of diligence, a lot of patience, a lot of timing, and Rhodesian Ridgeback is a big purpose-driven dog. So that's going to be a heck of a challenge. At our clinic, some of those dogs, what we end up having to do, as you described, is to bring them in pre-medicated and then give them one injection in the muscle and sedate them. And then that allows us to trim nails and draw blood and do all the other things that we need to do. Otherwise, if you have a veterinarian in the neighborhood, and now that the Rona restrictions are starting to be lifted, if you have a veterinarian in the neighborhood that can allow you to do just positive visits. We'll have clients who will come in when our parking lot is empty between noon and two and just walk through the clinic and we'll feed the dog treats, pet the dog, they leave. And we've had clients who have literally done that for months at a time. And we eventually progressed to the point that we were able to do these procedures whereby we were able to draw blood and give injections. And we'll also use topical lidocaine on those dogs because there are some, as big and strong as that dog is, they can be sensitive flowers when it comes to needles. And we can apply topical lidocaine so they can feel the needle less.
So some good ideas there, Nancy. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Our guest today is Dr. Bill Stork. He is the owner of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, author of several books, three books, as a matter of fact. And great to have him with us today. And he'll be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Dr. Bill. I'm Larry Mailer. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at your pet's health on the show today. Larry Mailer here with my guest, Dr. Bill Stork, owner and operator of the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, works with both small and large animals. And so it's great to have him back. What's been going on with your pets? What questions do you have? Love to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Bill, we've got a call from Amanda in Lake Mills, so let's go there. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Doctor, I was wondering, I have a seven-year-old beagle, and last fall he was diagnosed with a herniated disc, and it's pretty hard to see him in pain. He had a flare-up over the weekend, and I'm wondering, you know, he's off of the pain meds and muscle relaxers now, but how long am I supposed to keep him restricted? He's able to walk around, but every once in a while he lets out a little yelp.
Boy, from personal experience, I think we've all tweaked a nerve in our back and it ended up painful, as has happened with your dog. And the short answer to the question, how long should you keep him restricted? And as best you can restrict a seven-year-old beagle, I would say for at least 2 to 4 weeks after he is moving normally. I'm going to assume, based on your description, that he wasn't paralyzed. He was always able to walk, although in discomfort. And you can't prevent a dog from being a dog. You can't prevent a beagle from being a beagle. But if there are specific activities that encourage him, you know, to run rapidly, plant, pivot, change directions, then I would powerfully encourage you to avoid, you know, beagles aren't famous for playing ball, but that would be an example of the kind of activity we would like to avoid. You know, if they do play dates with other beagles, I would also avoid that. If you want to walk him, and if you want to walk him from Lake Mills to Johnson Creek on the bike trail, that would be fantastic because controlled exercise is going to be our friend. But changing elevations up and down stairs are not going to be your friend. Changing directions rapidly in aggressive activity are not going to be your friend. So I would take it easy for as long as you possibly can, especially specifically maybe 2 to 4 more weeks.
Yeah, there you go, Amanda. Thank you for calling. And Gwen in Weyerhaeuser, thank you for calling.
Hi there, Dr. Bill and Larry. I just wanted to offer a suggestion to the gentleman that called about his dog getting up in the morning, kind of being sick and eating grass and vomiting and then not being hungry for, you know, breakfast. We went through this with an English setter for almost, 6 months, where he would be sick in the middle of the night. We would be up for an hour. He'd go out in the yard, wouldn't come in. He'd want to eat grass, throw up. And I did a lot of Googling. We even tried the H2 blocker at the suggestion of our veterinarian, but what did the trick was much easier. I divided his, we have two dogs, their second feeding of the day into two parts. So they ate earlier in the afternoon and then 9 o'clock at night. And that gets him through the night, and that bile doesn't appear to leak into his tummy and make him sick. So that's my suggestion. Worked like a charm. We haven't had a problem for months.
Excellent suggestion. Other things that can help, and that dog was fairly young, so we would not think about conditions like mega esophagus, but raising the dog's food to about shoulder level can help as well.
Interesting. All right, Gwen, thank you so much. Douglas emailed that they have two mini doxy rescues, will be 13 soon. One of them is terrified of thunder, shaking and panting. And what Douglas does, he puts quilts in a closet corners and under a desk. They call them her nests. Sometimes she will go in and sit there. It's not 100% effective, but often that calms her down. Kind of a nice idea.
Absolutely. As far away and removed and dark and secure as possible.
Yeah. Jill in Waterford, your turn. Hi, Jill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two cats. Josie is 14 and Stella is 4, and I've had Stella since she was 6 weeks old. She's been with us. And back in March, they have decided they hate each other or something's going on, and they can't be in the same room anymore. The screeching and the attacking each other is just unbelievable. So I took the youngest to the vet because when she gets scared, she pees and actually poops while she's running through the house away from Josie. And they said there was nothing wrong with her, but they noticed some stress where she was licking off her fur on her legs. And it is still going on to this day. There was nothing wrong with Josie at the vet, and Stella is now more furs off of her legs. And she was living in the basement pretty much this whole time until we turned the air conditioning on. And now it's too cold for her, so she keeps coming upstairs, and I'm just at a loss. The vet said there was nothing physically wrong with them. And they tried the kitty Prozac. I tried that for 6 weeks. It had no effect on them.
And here we go again. Cats, our behaviorist at the clinic, will oftentimes say that dogs are territorial. Cats wrote the book on it. And even though those cats were together for a very long time, at some point in time, something must have shifted that resulted in an increased stress in that relationship between the two of them. Providing them separate existences, separate spaces, is the first and most obvious thing that you can attempt to do. Prozac would have been one of my suggestions, but you took the bullet out of my gun on that one. There is another potential option that this old guy, when pheromone therapy first came around, it sounded like a whole bunch of hocus pocus medicine to me. And there are products called Feel-Away that are feline facial pheromones that are essentially the substances that cats impart on things that they have deemed okay. And one of the events that helped me believe in pheromone therapy, we had an owner who had cats that were experiencing aggression. We prescribed Feel-Away. It's a plug-in, it's a diffuser, it will diffuse and cover 600 square feet of your house. He called us back. We did the follow-up telephone call, and he said things were going absolutely great. He called us up 3 months later and said it wasn't working anymore. As it turned out, his son needed to charge his iPhone and unplugged the Feel-Away, and the cats went back to cage matches on a daily basis. So aside from separating their environment, pheromone therapy can be your friend with regard to the inner cat aggression. Prozac can be an excellent choice for cats that are having hyper-grooming. Otherwise, one of the palliative measures that we'll use on cats that are hyper-grooming is good old-fashioned steroids. And big long discussion there, but I will just say that steroids can be very effective in low and tapering doses for cats experiencing hyperaggression.
All right. Jill,
hyper grooming, I'm sorry.
Yeah, hyper grooming. Yeah. Jill, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Brian in Wisconsin Dells, your turn. Hi.
There. So something happened to one of our chicks while it was in the coop. It's a 3-month-old Easter egger, and we found it in the coop that one of its legs went lame. We're not sure if the leg was broken or dislocated. And I've noticed that we did splint the area, I guess what you would call kind of the knee of the chicken, and it didn't really seem to help too much, but it seems like it's slowly regaining some mobility. This happened a couple of days ago, and its entire leg was lame, but it's still having problems with its talons. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, boy. I do not portend to be a poultry expert by any stretch of the imagination. First of all, nicely done with the splints, and I've seen people use anything from popsicle sticks split in half to duct tape to help support the joint. If he is continuing to have problems with that leg, and I wouldn't under any circumstances really expect him to recover within just a couple of days, but you say he's having trouble with his talons, in which case there's a possibility he could have some tendon damage. And if you've got a veterinarian in the area that's willing to see chickens or stumble through it as we do, we'll take radiographs of them to see if there's anything that is broken.
Oh, all right. Thanks, Brian, for calling. Dale emailed that his dog is afraid of the crackle of the fireplace, and it causes extreme anxiety, stress, panic, flight. She does respond to music and escapes to another room, but it would be great to be able to share a nice warm fire at the cabin with the dog.
Well, nice solutions. Background noise and another option for a place to be. You know, we talked earlier about counter conditioning, and that's always worthy of an attempt. It just requires persistence and patience to be able to get them to hang in there and attempt to create a positive association with something that is scary to them. We've had dogs that were just fine with thunder, okay with lightning. They were mortified at the sound of rain on windows.
Oh, man. So counter conditioning, and you can go online. Do you have any of that on your website? Anything in the way of videos or whatnot?
The video that we have, one of the videos that we have on our website under our behavioral tab at LakeMillsVeterinaryClinic.com is a pretty all-encompassing example of counter conditioning, and that's a touch training video that we talked about earlier, where we're rewarding dogs, allowing us to proceed from handling their paws to eventually trimming their nails. So many people will frequently, with the best of intentions, when dogs are puppies, handle their paws in an effort to get them used to having their nails trimmed. Well, handling their paws conditions them to allow their paws to be handled. Trimming their nails is an entirely different level of intervention, and dogs are famous for not liking to have their nails trimmed.
Let's see. Irene in Delafield. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a 14-year-old cat who is healthy, except that her blood work showed she was anemic, so the vet prescribed a molasses-like substance called liquitunic, and of course she doesn't like it. So I've tried to hide it in her food, and she'll sniff her food and look at me and say, "You expect me to eat that? I don't think so." So then she just doesn't eat. And I wondered if there was any kind of people food that would be rich in iron that a cat would like. She likes salmon.
There you go. That's the perfect option right there. And it's a little bit difficult to speak to a cat with anemia without the details that surround it. But I will say, with a 14-year-old cat, our job is to maintain their quality of life as best we can. And, you know, if you can find tuna, if you can find chicken, if you can find canned food that they will eat, and they will eat handily, then they should have as much of it as they will consume.
All right. Thank you for calling, Irene. And Barbara in Fort Atkinson, hi.
Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have a 20-pound, 2-year-old mixed breed dog, and we took him in for his annual examination and immunizations, and they gave him leptoimmunization, Lyme disease immunization, and I think a distemper shot. And after he came home, he acted very strangely. He was very sore. He didn't want to walk. And I wondered if that was unusual.
Well, he must have felt a little bit like I did after I got my second Rona vaccine. And to have that kind of post-vaccine reaction is not in the least bit unusual. I'm reminded every time I vaccinate my own dogs and take them to the farm the next day, and they're a little bit low and slow and lagging behind. Not unusual for them to be a little bit sore, for them to be a little bit slow. And incidentally, leptospirosis and Lyme vaccine are two of the things your dogs are most likely to be exposed to, two of the organisms that are extremely prevalent in your particular environment of Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. I know that because I live there. It's not unusual for them to be a little low and slow.
Thanks, Barbara. Rebecca in Rochester, Minnesota. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I had a quick question. I have a cat who is like 10 to 12 years old. Sweetest thing ever. And she suddenly started playing in her water dish and drooling and hiding. So I brought her in and they ran a bunch of tests and they put her on some steroids and antibiotics. And we did that and it cleared up a little bit, but then it came back. So they put her on a longer dose of that. And now I see, now that I'm weaning her off the steroids, that she's starting to get those behaviors again. And I'm wondering, do you think it's more of a neurological thing? They had mentioned maybe it was neurological. And for a 10 to 12-year-old cat, that seems like maybe it might be more torturous to her than... I'm not sure what next to do with her.
That is going to be one that's going to be a little bit difficult for me to respond to. I would have to make way too many suppositions to speak intelligently on this particular situation. I'm going to bet that when they put her on antibiotics and steroids, it was because her blood work all came back normal. And sometimes we will put cats on steroids when we're suspicious of this big, broad condition called inflammatory bowel disease. And it's not so much throwing darts blindly at a wall when we treat them this way. It's more as a result of rule outs and experience in that big broad category called inflammatory bowel disease. When we chase that diagnosis all the way down to the end, can be responsive to steroids. And the fact that when you attempt to back off the steroids, the symptoms return, it's powerfully suggestive that that is what's going on. We call that therapeutic diagnostics. We treat and see if they respond.
Interesting. Rebecca, thank you. Kristen in Rothschild emailed her 2-year-old Cavapoo. Stan squeals and yips when she sees squirrels on their walks. It's loud and heard throughout the neighborhood. Any tips on reducing her excitement and calm her?
Well, it sounds like a 2-year-old cockapoo to me. And we've spent a great deal of time in this particular session talking about counter conditioning. And the best suggestion that I can make is if you can find the squirrels and the chippies before she finds the squirrels and the chippies and the dogs and whatever else it is that she likes to get really, really excited about. And once again, ask her to do something that you want her to do. Get her attention, have some hot dogs, have some cheese, have some super high value treats in your pocket. Get her to sit, get her attention, and engage her in an activity before she sees the animals, the critters that get her so darn excited.
And Anne emailed that she has a one-year-old Boston Yorkie who loves to eat dandelions, grass, and all sorts of things in the yard. So she has two of them, two one-year-old Bostons. They're rescues, and they also eat yew bushes and other plants that are supposed to be very poisonous, but they never get sick. How worried should they be?
A lot of times that's just displacement behavior and is not likely that a card-carrying carnivore is going to consume enough. The ewes are absolutely toxic when fed to cattle. Not likely to be a problem in dogs. And, you know, all of the things that we talked about with regard to engaging these dogs, I think you described in there that maybe they have a fenced-in backyard and the dogs just get to go out in the fenced-in backyard. That's a great option for them to toilet and things like that. But it's back to the metaphor we used earlier about going on the same walk all the time. Dogs going to the same backyard all the time is like reading the same article in the paper over and over and over and over. Take them off the property, let them see other things, smell other things, feel other things elsewhere, and also give them other things that you would rather have them chew on as compared to grass and dandelions, but it's not likely to be like threatening.
Bill, thank you so much for being with us. We are out of time. I appreciate it. I hope we can do this again. Thank you.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Dr. Bill Stork, owner of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. You might go online and take a look at their website. Lots of good things on it. Some good videos and other tips and suggestions. Tomorrow we'll find out about how to choose the perfect Wisconsin campsite. At 11, and then at 11:45, we'll talk about Upham Woods Environmental Center. That's Wednesday starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, hey, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.